Welcome to Stephanie and Stephanie Talk Tunes. What's up, Talk Tuners? Welcome back to the show where we share stories and memories of the music that has shaped our lives. What's up? This is Stephanie Pena.
Hey, Talk Tuners. It's Stephanie Myers. What is up indeed? Before we get into our song of the episode, wanted to talk a little bit about a music documentary I recently saw. It was called Color Killer. And that is the name of a child punk band who happens to be the youngest band ever to play Warped Tour.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, as you can imagine, really cool little documentary. It's called Young Punks, A Punk Parable. It's four members of the band. They are between 8 to 12 years old, living in working class Massachusetts. They're such talented kids as you watch this documentary, and they're also really hardworking. They have parents who believe in what they're doing and are really supportive. They do recording and production and help them with their albums and also shuffle them to gigs. At one point they say, you know, if we had soccer kids, you know, we'd be getting up at 5 a.m. for soccer. But you know what? We got these kids that play these night gigs. So we go out, and sometimes we're out till 3 a.m., but the kids have balance. And it was so cool not only to, see these kids who are very dedicated to this cause, but also doing it in a environment that I think is not always, people don't always think of like as conducive to children, this nightclub and venue environment. But these kids have incredible musicianship and they're so hardworking. And it was a really cool documentary to see. And I would love to see them if they happened to be on a tour on some kind of festival that we were catching. Just highly recommend it. It's from 2021. It's still riding the film festival circuit. I believe you can also catch it on Apple TV, but you know, I love to recommend my music documentaries. So definitely check that out, Talk Tuners. Stephanie, if you haven't seen it, I think you'd love it.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So it came out in 2021. So it was pretty recent where they played Warped Tour.
Yeah, it was pretty recent. And the film kind of follows them around that being the inciting event. So it's all leading up to them playing Warped Tour with these, of course, very established bands, but they hold their own. And you get to see it in the documentary. I won't spoil all the little surprises for folks, but I highly recommend it. It was really, really neat. And,
awesome.
You know, child prodigies, man, they're amazing.
Yeah, no, super cool. And everything they were doing was original, right? They weren't doing covers, and maybe they did, but okay, that's even better. Were, like, oh my God.
Yeah, if there were covers, I don't remember them, but yeah, it's almost all original material. Yeah, they're
that's
incredible.
Super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, at 8 years old, I was playing the recorder half-assed. So, you know, I couldn't even imagine actually playing any type of really instrument well, just put it that way. Anyway, I like to talk about music, but I can't play it. So on that note, let's talk about a band that is amazing, that draws fans from all different lifestyles. Today, guys, we are talking about the one, the only Weezer and their debut album, known as the Blue Album, 1994 came out. And we're talking about their big smash, Say It Ain't So.
Oh yeah.
It's such a big, big smash, that song. And I do feel like I hear it in just proliferation in karaoke bars every single time. It's become a very big classic, which just shows their reach, right? It just shows their reach since 1992. And that's when they were established in LA, 1992. But since 2001, the band's consisted of Rivers Cuomo. Everybody knows Rivers. Patrick Wilson on drums, Scott Schreiner on bass, Brian Bell on guitar, keyboards, backing vocals. They've sold 10 million albums in the US, more than 35 million worldwide. Nothing to sneeze at. I think everybody knows the name Weezer. I think it's a household name. And that is for good reason, because these guys are just all over. But if we think about in 1994 with the Blue album, they, you know, were coming on the scene, and they signed to Geffen Records in 1993. They released this album in 1994, and what really propelled them, as we've talked about in other episodes with other bands, is the music videos.
Yep.
So the music videos for their singles, Buddy Holly, Undone, the Sweater Song, and of course Say It Ain't So, propelled by these videos, the Blue album became this multi-platinum success. And I thought that was really cool. If you've seen these videos, they're definitely of the time, and they definitely propelled their success, and you could tell they moved some records based on Weezer knowing it's like we got to connect with people visually. So I thought that was really cool. When you think about just contrast from the Blue album too, we think about their second album, Pinkerton, 1996, that featured a darker, more abrasive sound. That was actually a commercial failure and had received mixed reviews initially, but man, it went on to achieve big time cult status. People, God, I hear about it like almost every week to this day, how much people love Pinkerton. And the critical acclaim came later. It came years after it was released.
Mm-hmm.
So now both the Blue album and Pinkerton are frequently cited among best albums of the 90s by critics. So it just shows that sometimes there's a little bit of sleeper hits. And with Weezer, they're so prolific, you could just see it making sense for them this way to have this kind of success.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you, Stephanie. Oh my gosh. I mean, me as a Weezer fan, the Blue and Pinkerton, those are my favorite by far, with the Green album coming in third for me. And I just love that it's always colors, right? But, you know, talking about Pinkerton and just their success, of course, we're talking about Say It Ain't So today off the Blue album. You didn't even hear Pinkerton on the radio. Nothing. Like, nothing. That's how bad it was, y'all. So just relive that. Like, you did not hear it at all. And then their videos were not on MTV. Like, it was crazy. So, but hey, they prevailed and they're still here rocking. So, hell yeah. Pinkerton is amazing. I absolutely love that, you know, love that album. And just to say, the singles that were released off the Blue album, I mean, the first song was The Sweater Song, and then it was Buddy Holly, and then it was Say It Ain't So. Those are all very different songs.
Yeah.
They are different feelings. They are different emotions. And so that just showed, I mean, I honestly think that they kind of just prepped us to say, hey, we're not a one-dimensional band, because they definitely aren't. And Pinkerton is definitely different than the Blue, but masterpieces. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to the Blue album and making their splash, this album was actually produced by the late, great Cars frontman, Rick Ocasek. So you know it was going to be gold. You got Rick on your side, you know? I mean, ha, so great. So great.
Absolutely. And Talk Tuners, you've heard me talk about my obsession with the Cars a couple times on this show, but I love them so much. I love Rick. I love he was producer on this. I have all their albums. I have his solo albums and Benjamin Orr's solo albums too. And I got to see Rick do an in-store performance at a bookstore once in New York. And that was so special for me as this longtime Cars fan. I just lost my mind with excitement. So he's really the perfect person with the Cars aesthetic, with the Cars sound, to be producing the Blue album. So it made so much sense to me. He's truly the perfect choice.
You know, it's interesting too, you think about the videos that they've done, because Weezer, yes, absolutely, you're going to tie those videos in when you think about them, just, you know, when the name pops up in your head. Same thing with the Cars, right? So that's interesting. Like, their videos are out of this world. Very creative and amazing. So what a great collaboration.
Absolutely. You know, and I think about, again, Weezer's journey, and we were just talking about how prolific they are and were and continue to be. And I just think, okay, Rivers, like, to an extent, he realized, like, oh, maybe we're too much so. Maybe we're a little too prolific. And he admitted as much. He was in a conversation with Red Hot Chili Peppers Flea, bassist on This Little Light podcast. And Rivers said, you know, I think Weezer might have had too much quantity. And he said, our high volume of releases may have lessened our impact as a band, our legacy. And he said, I think if we were to go back and plan out an ideal artist's career, I don't know, maybe there's too much quantity, he explained. Maybe the whole thing would be more impactful if we could go back in time and just release the very best stuff, cherry pick and release it in a very strategic way. But hindsight's 2020, and hopefully future generations will sort it all out and they'll focus on the best stuff. So Rivers said, hey, in the future, I'm trying to pay more attention to fans, work out what they would actually like to hear from Weezer, which I thought was really cool. Some bands don't care about that, but he did. But he said, I really want to listen and see where our fans' heads are at, what they're reacting to. And sometimes it's not exactly where I would have gone on my own. So there's so much more, I think, territory for Weezer to explore. And it sounds like they're very ripe and open to be able to do that.
Yeah, and just keeping it real and being down to earth. They're not, so that's really, really uncommon to hear from artists that have made it big. You know, they still have that care factor of what their fans are interested in. And this band has a major impact on my life. One of my favorites, honestly. And, you know, they were different from the bands that I was listening to at the time. And they weren't flashy. They were nerdy. They are known as nerd rock. They're silly, serious, emotional, and they brought such creativity, and their music rocked just as hard as any other band that I was listening to at the time. And they are true to themselves, and it was great to just see them be that, be exactly that. Not trendy, not gimmicky, just themselves. There's nothing more I can say other than that. Like, mad respect for them. And I was hooked on them, you know, stuff like from the beginning. When I heard the Sweater song, I was like, whoa, what is this? I love it. And I got the tape and I joined the fan club at the time. You paid $5 and you got a copy of the handwritten lyrics for every song on the album. And that was pretty cool. So, and you literally saw like the scratch outs, like, oh, this lyric isn't good. Let me go back. And I thought that was really cool. So showing them that they're normal people, right? And I was very young at this age too, and connecting and figuring myself out and my creativity. I have a little bit of creativity, you know? And it's like, you know, this is awesome. Nothing is perfect right away. And they are rock stars, no doubt, 100%. But I was just, to me, that just showed that they were just being vulnerable and showing their creative process. And, you know, something that was interesting while I was doing research on that, it turns out that in 94, Geffen didn't want to put the song lyrics in the liner notes. And that's what started all of this. So I'm like, why? Because that was such a thing back then. So I need to know more. But yeah, I mean, because that's what I did, right? I got my tapes, I got my CD, and started looking at the liner notes, and I started singing songs, right? I'm like, yep, I want to know exactly. I want to know every word for word. I want to be on point. That's the kind of music fan that I am. And so I had my, it was stapled. It was just white paper. It was a photocopy straight up of a Xerox machine stapled in the upper left-hand side. And I would just flip it.
I love that so much. Yeah. And I love that because I feel like a relationship to an album, to me, that relationship to the liner notes were really huge for me. And over the years saying, oh, okay, like, what can I delve into, right? What can be really tangible? And the fact they're kind of like, well, for the next level of these liner notes, you're actually going to have to send away for it. Feels like a lost relic of a time that like they don't do that anymore. But how cool to actually get the opportunity to deepen your relationship with that album, you know?
Yes, exactly. And, you know, at that time, I mean, I still am to a certain point, you know, when I listen to music and I'm hearing lyrics, it's kind of like poetry to me. I want to interpret. That's what I really liked about it. And so that was cool. And this album, the Blue Album, just in general, you know, even if you don't know all the lyrics by heart or what, you know, it's a coming of age album. They're very young at this time. Rivers is, he's the main songwriter. Of course, he collaborates with his bandmates, but he's the main writer. And it talks about a lot of heartache. And just from, you know, other tracks off this album that you didn't hear on the radio, like The World Has Turned and Left Me Here. Oh, and heart wrenching, and so is Only in Dreams.
Yeah. Oh. Right.
Oh, teenage heartache, young adult heartache, feeling it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even Buddy Holly, it's a fun song, but that song is just talking about being scrutinized of, you know, hanging out with people don't necessarily look like yourself. Right. So that itself, I mean, super cool. I love the Weezer.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they really see how all those elements come together, I think. And I really appreciate that from them. They see all the elements coming together, both visual, both like, how do I connect emotionally through these albums? Like, what does that look like? And Rivers is the maestro of it all, which I think is awesome. And very much for Say It Ain't So. And I just think about the music video for that, because they were just so good at being like, well, let's marry all the elements here, including the visual ones. If you go back mm-hmm. and watch it, Talk Tuners, it's a very like deliberately lo-fi music video. There's cloth draped from the ceiling in a house while the band plays underneath. There's much of it has Rivers without his trademark glasses. There's somebody doing laundry from a washing machine in the middle of the set. It's very offbeat, which is to me just like Weezer. So I appreciated it, and it felt like a little bit of a time capsule to watch it. So I thought that was really cool.
Yeah. I mean, and that video was like kind of like a literal depiction of as much as it could be of the song itself. So the video was shot at the garage in a Los Angeles home of Rivers and the bassist Matt Sharp, where they lived. So it was their home. It was directed by Sophie Miller, who's also done videos for the Eurythmics and Annie Lennox as a solo artist, and even No Doubt. And the idea of the video is coming from the literal meaning of the song. It is capturing a moment in time. The song saying so was written by Rivers, who came home from school one day and saw his stepfather's Heine, or Heineken, for those that know, you know, somebody's Heine is crowding my icebox. And that triggered, and it's so funny, right? I think about it back then. I was like, Heine, like, but, right? No, I'm talking about beer. I wasn't drinking beer at the time, right? But...
It's like somebody's butt is crowding my icebox. What is this?
What is this? young Stephanie didn't know. Anyway, but that's funny, right? So like now I was talking about a Heineken. That triggered awful, painful memories, unfortunately. His family comes from a split family. His father had battled alcoholism for many years. And that story isn't captured in that song. Talking about, you know, he writes to his father. You know, dear daddy, you know,
yeah,
talk about how we found Jesus and mm-hmm. things are together. And, you know, years later, since the song has come out, he has reestablished a relationship with his father, Frank. And I actually saw a couple of performances on YouTube. Frank is a drummer. He's a professional drummer. And there's been some sets where he's come out and jammed with the band. And I think that's pretty dope. So yeah.
To me, to have that come full circle, right? You're writing a song about what has happened to you in your childhood, like all this, and to be like, oh, okay, like we're bringing it around full circle. Now my dad is here. Now he's back with mm-hmm. us. To me, that's huge.
Yeah, it absolutely is. So, wow. And this song is just so, so good. And, you know, the lyrics go on. He's talking about the unfortunate things that he had to experience with his father. And he was worried that his stepfather was going to follow into that same pattern. Hey, I get it. You know, it's triggering, but man, such an impactful song. And when they play live, they bring that emotion too, as well.
They absolutely do. I've had the chance to see them a couple times. They were absolutely amazing. I got to see them play in Dallas around 2001. Not only did they bring the house down, they have their, you know, it's a big light up Weezer logo in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, it's Rivers playing from all parts of the stage. They're absolutely so much fun. So I got to see them then. And then you and I got to see them in 2005 opening for the Foo Fighters in Jersey, which yep. was so cool. And what a nice double bill, right? What a cool double bill.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, top that on the charts of us being spoiled and seeing amazing shows, two powerhouse bands. And we weren't paying that much money for them. Like, you know, like we have to pay now for concerts.
No, not at all.
Could you
not
imagine that price tag today?
Yeah, oh, no. Not at all. I don't even want to think about it, honestly.
Got to put that on layaway. Anyway, so Yeah, I've seen Weezer. Yes, of course, we saw them together. That was a phenomenal show. I've seen them. I was doing a count, probably about 7 times total. My favorite memory of their live, their live set experience for me was back in 2011. I was living in Austin and they were on the Memories Tour. And this tour was basically 2 consecutive nights. First night, them playing the Blue Album. Second night, playing Pinkerton in full. I was able to go to that show. I was working. But that's fine. I was still on the grounds and I was able to enjoy it and hear it while working. And yes, so whoever's listening to this and be like, you should be doing your job. I was doing my job and enjoying the music at the same time. Thank you very much. And rightfully so. That night, one of the nights, Rivers was wearing all white, just looking angelic, and then got on top of Stubbs and just started jamming and playing and singing. And I'm like, dude, you've hit rock star stardust like nobody's business. Dude.
He actually got on the roof to play? This is amazing.
Yes! Yes, yes, because I was doing security at the time and I was at the green room. And I was like, oh my God, look at him. I'm like, okay. Yeah, so Rivers, he's definitely come out of his shell. Because when we think about when they first came on the scene, you know, they're a little bit reclusive and just not, like I said, flashy. But man, he's owning it now and in a very, very great way.
I think that's amazing. That's a show you'll never forget. My God, with that level of showmanship, be like, yeah, I'm gonna like fly above the crowd, like, why not?
Yeah, two favorite albums, man.
I'm so cool. Yeah,
absolutely. And like, oh, both of my favorite albums, I'm like, okay, I've lived, I've heard them both in their entirety.
you're good to go at that point.
What else do I need?
I know. Well, and it's crazy that you've seen them like 7 times total and seen this evolution over the years. I would love to hear from, you know, talk tuners. If you have stories about Weezer, if you have different things, we want to hear them. We always ask you to share your memories, talk tuners. And I wanted to also mention we heard back from our Violent Femmes episode. We heard back from you. We appreciate it. Meeples and Wine reached out on Twitter/X and said, you know, we got to see the Violent Femmes at Gen Con back in 2000. It was trippy, especially when Philip Glass showed up and he and Gordon did a song about either taking over the world or learning to speak French. Great times. And Philip Glass is probably my favorite living composer. So I thought that was very, very cool. What a crazy memory for Philip Glass to show up at the Violent Femmes. I've never even heard of this. So thank you for sharing. And please continue to share your memories with us, talk tuners.
Yeah, guys, you can share all your memories. We're all over the socials. So find us Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Stephanie's Talk Tunes, Twitter @ Stephanie's Talk, Gmail, stephaniestalktunes@gmail.com. An easy shortcut to all things Stephanie and Stephanie Talk Tunes is simply stephaniestalktunes.com. And hey, guys, as far as exposure goes, please rate us on Good Pods or give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You know, we appreciate all the support. And then most of all, most importantly, we want to hear from you. We wouldn't have this, you know, we wouldn't be doing a show unless we, you know, had an audience to share it with.
We absolutely want to hear from you. Remember, we got a feedback loop for you here, Talk Tuners. So reach out. And as always, we're a proud member of the Pantheon Network. Definitely check out our brother and sister music podcast. They are fantastic. They're worth your time. And you can subscribe to that and check out what we got going on. So thank you for it. Check it out. I'm Stephanie Myers. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye, guys. Stephanie Pena here. Take care.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.